Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, October 8th, 2017. This is episode 1429. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass and gets delivered to your door, ready to display right out of the box. Visit fracture.me and use the code TECH15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and time to talk tech, computers, and the internet, and home theater. We're going to talk about digital photography. Chris Marquardt will be joining us a little bit later. We'll talk about smartphones. There's sure a lot of them out there and more to come soon. Smart watches. There are fewer and fewer of those. I guess I could start. You know, it's funny. As I do the list every year, I have to change stuff. Like I used to say, and we'll talk about automotive GPS. No. There's just things you do. Desktop computing, not so much anymore, right? Just times change. Anything that's got a chip in it, anything with technology, that's what we talk about. A lot of talk these days about the voice assistants, your Amazon Echo and your Google Home and your Cortana on Windows and Siri on Apple. That's kind of a big technology right now that just didn't even exist 5 years ago. We didn't talk about that very much. I guess it existed, but it wasn't anything to write home about. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the we don't talk about camcorders much either anymore. Video. I don't get video camera questions as much as I used to. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you're calling from the U.S. or Canada, that'll be toll free. But because it's a toll free number, 888-827-5536. You can use Skype out or anything that lets you call a phone. It shouldn't cost any money. Actually, in the U.S. now, you can use your Google Home or your Amazon Echo to call that number. 888-827-5536. Toll free. Let's see. Website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. That's a good place to go if you hear something. You hear me mention something and you're driving, you don't want to write down a link or, you know, tell your co-pilot, hey, remember this. Remember that link. Remember that. Just remember this. All you have to remember is techguylabs.com. It'll all be there. It'll all be there. Post yesterday from the chief security officer at Facebook. I like the guy, Alex Stamos. Although I have to say he was at Yahoo when it turns out 3 billion accounts were leaked. So he says, I didn't know anything about it. They refused. They didn't tell me. And as soon as I found out, I quit. Well, now he's at Facebook, where he's a chief security officer there. He says, you guys in the press, I guess that means me, you guys in the press, he did a whole tweet storm on this. You just don't understand how hard it is to Facebook and keep the bad guys out of there. You don't understand how hard that's hard. Hard. There's a real gap, he says, between academics and journalists in Silicon Valley. Oh, those of us on the ground there doing the hard work. I'm seeing, Stamos tweets, a ton of coverage of our recent issues. You know, those ads that Russia bought, those political ads that Russia bought, that Facebook, you know, kind of first for months said, oh, no, there was no, we didn't sell ads to Russia, no. And then when press said, well, maybe they're, okay, yeah, we sold a few thousand ads, yeah. and now is testifying in Congress and is showing Congress, but not yet showing us. I think it's pretty easy for Facebook to quell the criticisms. All you have to do is make a place where we can see what ads are being shown. See, the problem is with Facebook is anybody can buy ads, even Russians can buy ads on Facebook and show them to a very select group of people and no one else sees them. They're called dark ads. And as a result, they can do all, you know, they can lie. They can do all sorts of stuff. Nobody will call them on it because they're only, you know, aiming at people who will go, oh, that's true. And no one else sees it. So all Facebook has to do is just be public with this stuff. Who's buying these ads? What do these ads look like? Let us see them. Well, I don't know if they want to do that. He says, I'm seeing a ton of coverage of Facebook driven by stereotypes of our employees and attacks against fantasy straw men tech companies. Huh? Nobody of big substance, nobody of substance at the big companies thinks of algorithms as neutral. See, this is where Facebook comes under criticism. Because they are, you know, when you go to Facebook, I've talked about this many times, and you look at your Facebook news feed, that isn't everything that your friends and family are posting. Not at all. It's a carefully groomed feed, algorithmically is what we call it. It's done by a computer algorithm or computer program. And it's groomed for one purpose only, to keep you reading. So they take out stuff that's not going to engage you. They watch carefully to see what gets likes, what gets reshared, what gets just people looking at it for a long period of time. They make sure you get more of that, less of that other stuff. You know, stuff about your sister's baby. Yeah, you don't watch that. You don't like. You don't. We want stuff you want because we want you to spend more time on Facebook, see more ads, all of that. He says, nobody of substance at the big companies thinks of algorithms as neutral. Nobody is not aware of the risks. Well, there is a risk. Because those algorithms can very much slant, we know this, slant not just your politics or what you think about something. That's the least of it. It can slant your feelings. It can slant whether you're happy or sad, whether you're feeling good about the world or feeling bad about the world. Now, I'm not saying that anybody's at Facebook's turning that knob. In fact, that would be silly. Facebook's a business. Their only goal is to make more money. That's what they're set up to do, make as much money as possible for shareholders. Yeah, you can have all that Mark Zuckerberg highfalutin. The world is a better place when people are connected. But really, come on, he wouldn't be doing his job as CEO if he weren't maximizing for profit. That's what all companies do. They maximize for profit. And the way you do that with Facebook is you make sure that people spend as much time as possible reading Facebook. He says, and it goes on to say, an understanding of the risks of machine learning drives small c conservatism in solving some issues. I don't understand what he's talking about. Lots of journalists have celebrated academics who have made wild claims about how easy it is to spot fake news and propaganda. I'm not one of those people. I know. I know it's very hard. I don't blame Facebook for not spotting and pulling down fake news. I don't blame them. First of all, fake news is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? One person's fake news is one person's truth. And I don't know how a computer can decide the two. There's facts. You can always check facts. But even that's difficult because a lot of what you see on Facebook isn't factually based. It's opinion or feelings. So, of course, this is hard to do. And Alex, I hope you don't think I ever said it was easy and Facebook can easily fix this. I don't think they can. They can do something, though, to reassure all of us, and that is let us know who's buying ads, all of us, not just the people who are targeted, but everybody. Who's buying ads? You know that, Facebook. You do, because you take their money. And show us what those ads are. And then I know there'll be many, but people will be able to go through them and say, oh, look, look who's buying ads. Look who's, see, I'm not worried about Facebook slanting its feed. I'm worrying about foreign governments trying to influence us, our country and our politics by buying the feed, using the algorithm against us. Let the humans get involved. Don't you think? Anyway, that was the big story this week is Facebook saying, Russians did buy quite a few ads. Actually, they got a, and I don't think Facebook minds saying this. They only spent $100,000, at least so far. That's what we know. And they got some great results. It really worked well. Really worked well. Big lawsuit against Google saying, oh, what Google does. They said this about Microsoft in the 90s. What Google does is they say, hey, we're interested in your technology. Let's look at it. Sign this NDA. You look at it. And then they say, hey, we don't want to buy it. And then they make it themselves. There's a lawsuit claiming Google's a racketeer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There she is. Ensconced in her special soundproof booth. Kim Schaffer answering the phones. Hi, Kim.
Good morning.
You know, people don't know because this is radio and mm-hmm. they can't see you, but we actually put you in especially a beautiful set with lighting. And behind you, there is a AM transmitter from an old radio station in Sioux City, Iowa. And behind you on over your left shoulder, there's the Gates Stereo Statesman mixer board that I first used when I got into radio 40 years ago. Well,
it's not the same one.
It's the same model, but I did not fix it up. But there's people who Mike Doro did that transmitter. He's a very well-known radio engineer who specializes. He does the same thing to old transmitters that some people do to old cars, you know? Mm-hmm. They clean them up. They get new paint. They fix them up. And his thing is, I'm going to make it look like original. Like this is what
it's beautiful.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's nice and shiny.
Yeah,
and I like new paint, new coat of paint.
And I think it was Ken Jennings who did the Gates Stereo Statesman behind you. He refurbishes old mixers, and that's the old mixer that I used. And then behind it, of course, all my ham radio gear. So you're in Radio Corner.
I am in Radio Corner. It's only appropriate.
Yeah, none of it's functional. You're the only functional thing back there.
And that's debatable.
No, you're great. You're great. In fact, I look at the phones and you've lined up a bunch of fun calls for us. Who should I kick things off with?
Bob here? In Philadelphia had to do a factory restore on his Android phone.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a
Been
bummer.
Been there, done
and
that.
He got all of his stuff back. So you want, if this should happen again, wants to...
What's the best practice?
How do you prevent from being in this situation?
Thanks,
again?
Schaffer.
You're welcome.
Bob, Philadelphia, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
How you doing? How's it going?
Oh, it's going great.
Well, yesterday you were talking about a guy with a phone. I have a phone. It's an LG V20, and it's a dual SIM phone. But after having it for a couple of months, all of a sudden I stopped being able to receive calls. Calls would just go to voicemail.
Oh.
And so I went to T-Mobile, who SIM I had in it, and they couldn't help. I went to LG. LG couldn't help.
You didn't have two SIMs in it, did you?
Yeah, it's a dual SIM phone.
So you had two different SIMs in it?
Correct.
What was the second SIM?
They were both T-Mobile SIMs, just two different numbers.
Yeah, there's your problem. The phone probably was a little confused. Does it have a switch in it that says use this SIM, not that SIM?
Yes, correct. It's not a physical switch.
Settings. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you want to make a call on line one or line two,
It seems like that. Yeah, that should work. Yeah. T-Mobile. See, it's T-Mobile I would blame for this, by the way.
Well, the guy at the T-Mobile store is very helpful, but he couldn't fix it. Anyway, so I went back to the seller. And the seller said, did you do this? Did you do that? Did you do this? And finally they said, we need you to do a factory reset.
Yeah.
Before they would...
Because they want to make sure you haven't installed something that's messing it up.
All right. So I did the factory reset. And now I can receive calls again.
Woohoo.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem. All my stuff is gone.
I shouldn't laugh. That's a sad thing. Yeah, there is a way to avoid that with Android. You don't have to. In fact, I'm an expert at this because I'm always, as you might know, I'm always trying out new Android phones as part of my job. And so I'm always moving from phone to phone. And if I had to start from scratch each time, I'd tear my hair out. So I'll tell you what I do, and then I'll give you – there's an even more elaborate way of doing this. But the very first thing to do is to go in the settings on your phone and I don't know how much LG's modified. As you know, every manufacturer has their kind of unique way of doing settings. But it's in the backup and reset setting on a normal Android phone. LG might have put that somewhere. But if you look at backup and reset, you'll see at the top it says backup my data on. What that is that's Google. That's not LG. That's not T-Mobile. That's Google. In fact, you choose which backup account. Now, Google backs up a lot of the information on your phone, including passwords and so forth. Then you'll see a button that says automatic restore. And if you read it, it says when reinstalling an app, restore backed up settings and data. And then the other thing Google does is it remembers what apps you had installed. And when you set up the new phone, it'll say, oh, I can restore an old phone. And it'll give you the choices of various phones it's backed up. In this case, you'd say, well, I want the most recent backup from my V20. It will restore it. Now, it will re-download the apps. That's kind of what you want because the apps, you want the latest version. But it will, all the settings will be preserved. Now, if you're thinking about, there's data that won't be preserved. That's the bulky data, like photos, videos, music. And for all of those, you should use, you know, the appropriate system to back them up. For instance, I use Google Photos. So every time I take a photo on my phone, it's backed up to Google Photos. And I don't even worry about whether I can get it back on my phone. They're all there. I mean, if I, you know, that's how I look at them. Google Photos is I use that as my gallery, not the LG gallery. And then same thing with music. I mean, I don't know what music. Do you use a music system besides the music app that's on the phone? Do you use?
I'm an old school guy. I have my own music. And,
yeah. So that you should have backed up to a computer. I presume you do. Right.
Well. I have all my data, so the data isn't the issue.
Oh.
So what I'm looking for is, like, in the Windows world, I use a Cronus backup.
Yeah, I understand. You want an image backup, but I will give you that. I will give you that. But in general, that's what I do, and everything gets restored, and I'm happy, and I'm good to go. The image backup, it's not going to exactly do what a Cronus does. So in Windows, you back up an image file. Then if you can erase the drive and then just use the little restore program and whoosh, it fills it up and it's identical. The closest thing to that is something called Helium. And that is a free app that's available in the Play Store. And it will back up locally, or you can use Dropbox or one of the other things. All the stuff. It doesn't do quite an image backup. I don't know of anything that does an image backup. But it gets very darn close to an image backup. And then the restore is simply a process of downloading the backup from Dropbox and putting it back.
Because the issue is I have some applications on Android where the normal way you do it, you just save the data, install the app, and then push the data back, and you can put it back in. But I have a couple of them where it doesn't work. And so they said, well, you didn't do it our way, so too bad. You know.
Well, that's annoying. My experience has been that for most apps, but not all apps, you're right, the settings that are saved by Google are sufficient. But, you know, there's things like my audiobook purveyor, Audible. I have to re-log in and I have to re-download the books. But anything – so Helium, the only negative on Helium is you need to be root. And on that old phone, that V20, you can easily get root. It's a little bit of a process. But any program that's going to do it right is going to need you to be root because it can then access everything. You have to be the super user to access all the hidden folders and things like that. So root your phone, install Helium, and that's as close as you can get. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Should point out that in this case, restoring it would have restored whatever was wrong with it. So not a desirable thing in general. That's why I don't really. I can get so close to done, and then just within say an hour, download the books I want or whatever, log into a few things. Oh, I thought Helium did require root. It says it requires root. Okay, Uncle Bick has a page. Let's put Uncle Bick's page in the show notes. Thank you, Uncle Bick. VicLovin.com/mobile-device-backup. Nice. So this is a thank you, Uncle Bick, for that. Would you? What would you say is different from? Is there anything different from what I said here? Swiss Code Monkeys. Oh, AppBrain. Yeah, AppBrain. That's kind of out of date. I don't know if AppBrain's still around. Is it? My Backup Pro. You like that? Oh, Helium. So Helium, in their description, says, install Helium on Android, root user, you're done. Oh, I see. You don't have to be root user if you're... I don't know. Anyway, Kosh is the guy as far as I'm... concerned. But we'll put a link. That's a good one. Thank you, Uncle Bick. We'll put a link to this article, which is a little old, I think. Is AppBrain still around? I feel like they were purchased or they went out of business. Swiss Code Monkeys. No, they're still here. I stopped using them a long time ago. It's not the Swiss Code Monkeys anymore. That's what happened. Yeah, I think it's changed. It's not what it used to be. It's something else. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it did need root. Oh, the Nandroid backup. Yeah. That's not what he wants to do, though. He does. He says he does, but he doesn't want to do that. Because you're right. That would restore an image backup would restore what he doesn't want. Ra-ta-ta-ta. Yes, you noticed I'm using the Essential phone. I'm kind of intrigued by how, you know, because the Essential is bezel to bezel almost. I'm kind of intrigued by how it's a big screen and a little phone. See, it's actually a screen... very close to, if not a little bit bigger, I think maybe the same size as the iPhone 8 Plus. But look at the size of the phone compared to it. Not a OLED screen. Battery life is phenomenal, though. Yeah, I use the Samsung backup. So Helium. Did Titanium get renamed to Helium, or did Helium rename to... weren't they the same? Where's my keyboard? Oh, no, they're not. Okay. But Titanium does need root. That's right. Helium... I know, I'm very intrigued by the G30. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is a... So what our last caller wanted to do is what we call the words are image backup. And if you've used a computer, you're probably familiar, maybe not, but it's a handy tool. You're familiar with the idea of backing up the entire hard drive as it's like a freeze-dried package, as a single file, which can then be whipped back on the hard drive very quickly. There are lots of programs that do it. Originally, it was Norton Ghost. So sometimes people call this ghosting the hard drive. Norton is long. I don't think they can get Norton Ghost anymore. But there's lots of duplicate or similar programs, like as the caller was talking about. Acronis True Image is very popular. That's a paid program. Ease US has a disk cloner that's free. There's a Linux-based one that, you know, you can use on any hard drive called Clonezilla. And anybody in IT knows about this. The reason it started in IT with Norton Ghost is if you have imagine you have 300 computers to set up, big pallet out front with 300 brand new IBM PCs to set up for your office, you don't want to have to go one by one and put a Windows disk in and the application disk. So what you do is, since they're all identical, is you make one computer all set up perfectly with all the programs and files and settings and business-specific tools, and then you make an image file, And then you merely have to install that image file on all the other, the 299 other computers. So that saves you a lot of time. And that's why ghosting or disk imaging first came about. But it turns out it's a very handy adjunct. It's not your only part of your backup strategy. It's one part of a larger backup strategy, because an image backup is kind of a moment in time. The minute you use that computer and add another program or create a new document, it's not on the image, right? So you have to use an image is mostly used to get a computer set up quickly or get it back to a known state, maybe with no viruses, for instance, and then install any changes. That's why you might need a secondary backup program. And, of course, don't forget off-site backup and all of that. But imaging is great. I'm not sure I don't know if it migrates to the phone as well as our caller thought. He wanted to do that to his phone. Had he done that to his phone, by the way, he would have restored the problem he erased it for in the first place, because it puts it back identically. And so for the most part, on both iOS and Android, iOS has a built-in kind of restore feature. When you get a new iPhone, you connect your old iPhone to iTunes, or you could do it through the cloud wirelessly, but it's a little slower. And you make an image, in effect, of that phone. In fact, Apple even lets you save passwords and, you know, all your secret stuff, as long as you password protect that backup, to your Mac and then or PC. And then when you get the new phone, you plug it in, and it says, oh, you got a new phone. Do you want to restore the contents of your previous phone? And it does that. Some things still have to be downloaded. Apps, I think, at least in my experience, have to be re-downloaded, things like that. But again, that makes sense. There are similar tools. If you have a Samsung phone, Samsung has a backup system. Google has a backup system. So similar tools for Android. But I think wisely, they don't try to restore every bit of the system. They try to get all your settings back, for all your apps, all your passwords back, and then let you re-download the apps. In his case, I would guess it's an app that was causing the problem. So it was good advice from the repair people who said, well, before we're going to look at this, you really should wipe the phone. And that fixed it, didn't it? That fixed it. I don't think this is – admittedly, a smartphone is a computer, right? Of course it is. But – these smartphone operating systems, iOS and Android, are much more recent than Windows and Mac OS. And they've been designed differently for a different situation. So not everything that you do on a desktop computer applies. And I think image backup is a good example. You probably don't want to run an antivirus on a mobile device either, although you might say, gosh, this is the riskiest thing I've got. It's always on the internet. All my stuff is on here. But an antivirus is not going to have the same capabilities on a mobile operating system, because mobile operating systems, being newer, are designed with security in mind. And they won't let any individual program have the run of the place. They just won't. They said, no, you can't see that. You can't touch that. That's not yours. That's more secure, but it also inhibits antivirus programs. You know, while I was on vacation, I know a lot of you like this program, CCleaner, from Piriform. A lot of you, you know, every time we talk about problems, especially on Windows, people will bring this up in the chat room and on the website. And I've always said, I don't. Well, I was right. I'm nervous about this. And it's the same reason I'm nervous about all security software. It operates at such a low level that it's a prime target for bad guys. So for months, hackers were hiding malware in CCleaner. Millions of people downloaded it. The legitimate signed version of CCleaner being distributed by Avast. I guess, did Avast buy it? Contained a multi-stage malware payload that rode on top of the installer. According to Avast, CCleaner has been installed more than 2 billion times. 2.27 million people were affected by the attack. And Avast Piriform, yeah, I guess Avast bought Piriform. Avast Piriform says they think they were able to prevent it from harming computers. The word think worries me. This is the quote. Piriform believes that those users are safe now. My problem all along with all this security stuff is, in order for it to work, it has to really have low-level access to your system. That is a recipe for disaster. If there's something wrong with it, if it's got a bug in it, or if somebody gets a hold of it and puts stuff in it, it's a disaster. You know what my rule is now, by the way? New rule for it applies to computers and phones and any computing device. Install the littlest, the least amount of things you need. Don't just, and you know, I know, get a new computer. First thing you do is you start downloading stuff. I'm going to install everything. No. Stop. Every program you install has the potential of opening a hole in your computer. Now, it's inevitable. You got to do it, right? Because you need software on your computer. But download as little as possible. And for the most part, if you can't, stick with big companies if you download it. You know, stick with Microsoft and Apple and Google. The less you have on your computer, the better. Install it. And that includes phones. Don't just go wildly installing applications. I know I'm guilty of that. I have hundreds of apps on my smartphone. That's a mistake. Install as little as possible. And you'll be actually safer, believe it or not. Bill in Palm Springs is next. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning, Leo. Hope you could give me some help with my new iPhone 8.
Yay. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, I think. The phone will usually not be able to recharge when I am using a navigation app as I drive.
Oh, yeah, that's merely that the charger isn't providing enough juice to compensate for the amount of juice the nav app is drinking. But you can get a better charger because there's definitely enough wattage coming out of your cigarette. Are you using a cigarette lighter charger?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, there's certainly enough wattage. So what you want to do is look for a charger that has higher wattage.
Are we talking USB-C power delivery?
Yeah, so all USB power, not C necessarily, all USB power is 5 volts. But what can vary among chargers is how many amps. And as you remember from your ham radio exam, power equals volts times amps. Wattage equals volts times amps. So look for a higher amp charger. Find the highest you can. That will power your phone while you're using Waze. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, they sell like chargers that are like 0.5 amps. And that's going to give you 2.5 watts, which isn't going to charge your phone fast enough.
I'm using 2.4 amp chargers and still no luck.
Really? That's quite a bit. Okay, so that is now you're talking 10 plus watts. That's what I would recommend. And you still say the phone is draining faster than it than. That's interesting.
It holds perfectly. It doesn't drain, nor does it charge. It'll just hold at like 72% for an hour of driving.
Ah. How many ports on that charger?
There's two, but I'm only using one at a time.
So some chargers, not all, some chargers will put all 11 watts into that one port. Some will divide them.
Hmm.
So you may not be getting, in fact, the 11 watts you think you're getting, or the 12 watts you think you're getting. You might be getting half that. Try getting one that just has one. Or do you have anything running on the second USB? You say it's just the phone on that. Just get one with a single USB port.
Okay, I could try that. Or if I'm going to buy new stuff, I was thinking, again, of going up to USB-C for the extra 3 amps of oomph.
Yeah, then you'd have to have an adapter, I guess, huh?
Well, they're selling them now with a USB-C to Lightning cord. A dedicated
cord. Oh, yeah, of course. In fact, I have that cord because that's exactly our recommendation for fast charging on an iPad is to get the larger 29-watt USB-C charger. And then get an adapter.
I'm not looking for charging speed. I'm just looking for charging.
Yeah,
period.
you want to gain.
Can you recommend any manufacturers of cigarette lighter adapters for USB-C?
Anker, A-N-K-E-R. They're the best. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the Anker page. And they have 24-watt chargers. That should probably, I would think. Now, it may be there are other things, other factors keeping that iPhone from gaining. Make sure it's not hot. It might not charge if it's warm in the sun.
Okay.
So keep it cool. Somebody's saying mount it in front of an air conditioning vent. That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
But look at the Anker chargers. Those are by far the highest quality, and I think they're among the highest wattage. A 24-watt Anker charger. If you do not gain with a 24-watt charger, then you have to look at something else.
Okay, fair enough. That makes perfect sense to me. Okay, I'm going to go down that road, literally, and see if I can get this thing charging up, because I do use it for navigation on and off road.
And if the higher watt charger doesn't work, then you might want to look at the phone itself, and you know there's a battery graph in there, and see if there's other things draining it. And maybe there is a malfunction in the iPhone. And if that's the case, you can easily bring it to Apple and say, hey. You know, may also try a different cable. Sometimes the cable is, you know, make sure you're using an Apple cable or an MFI made for iPhone cable.
Okay, I'll double check on that as well.
Sure.
And because my old iPhone was a 5S, and it had no problem charging and running navigation, but it was a smaller screen, wasn't it?
Exactly. It's not draining as much.
Less power.
Yeah. One of the reasons I took Facebook off my phone is that's a notorious power drain, and so. And it may be, as you may know, one of the reasons we don't talk about battery life too specifically is because it depends on your area. If you live in an area where the cell signal comes and goes or is marginal, your phone has to work harder, and that may be draining the battery because you're downloading maps as you go. So you may have experienced greater drain in the particular area that you drive than I might here. That's a real variable. Phones work very, you know, the radio on the phone is a big drain.
Yeah, good point, because sometimes I am able to charge, most of the time not. So that would help explain it.
Yeah, might be related to that. Hey, thanks for the call. Got to run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, ended up recommending for our last caller chargers from Anker, A-N-K-E-R. I love Anker's stuff. It's a Chinese company. They're trying to be the kind of the Apple of accessories. And they do a nice packaging job. They make really quality stuff. And they make car chargers for the cigarette lighter that go up to 24 watts. They go up to a lot of wattage. So, however, you know, that's only one of the factors that determines how fast your phone charges. If your phone's hot, the circuitry in the phone may keep it from charging. It may slow down charging. The modern smartphones have very sophisticated circuitry to protect the battery. Heat is bad for lithium-ion batteries, and if it's a hot condition, sitting on a dashboard in the sun in your car, sometimes the phone will actually shut down, but it's certainly the charger, and this charger circuitry is going to do its best to protect the battery. That may mean slowing down charging, trickle charging, when it's warm. That's something to be aware of. And you may also have other drains. One thing that is always tricky with smartphones, and one of the reasons we don't – Apple doesn't, you know, give you – exact battery numbers, most people won't, is it your usage will, your mileage may vary, as they say. The worst drain on smartphones, besides the screen's a big drain, and a bigger screen means more juice is going out, so our big screen phones do drain a lot of power. But the other big drains are the radios. So now if you think about it, you're driving down the road, you've got your GPS, your mapping program running, and it's constantly hitting the LTE to download the latest map. You could sometimes even see that happening as you're going. If you have marginal cell reception, or you're having the towers are handing off a lot, or maybe there's a lot of seeking involved, that can drain the battery very fast. It's one of the reasons when I travel, for instance, I expect much lower battery life on my smartphones, because I know they're roaming and they're working hard to get a signal, and that could cut your battery life in half. 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Back to Terry, Amarillo, Texas. Hi, Terry. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm WQ5Z, a fellow ham.
Well, good to see you, W6TWT. And we got a bunch of hams because there's a big ham-vention going on, PacificCon, in Northern California right now. They're all out for PacificCon.
Wish I was there.
Oh yeah, it's, you know what, hams is really as important as amateur radio is to public safety, to education. It's also really a social club, isn't it? It's really just a,
it is.
Just it's, and I love that about it. It's really a place to.
I've
get
done
together.
Storm spotting for years, but
fun.
But like the social part as well.
Yeah, me too. What can I do for you today?
I have a MacBook Air mid 2012 version running El Capitan, and I can only get into the computer in safe mode. It'll go all the way up to the that shows the login name and the password, and whenever I hit a key, it just goes thunk, and that's all that happens. But there's a tone, nothing happens. And I've disabled all of the programs that open and log in, and I don't know exactly what else to do.
But when you hold down shift key and boot into safe mode, it works.
It does.
So what that shift key does is it turns off, it stops loading anything extraneous, anything more than it needs, including drivers and kernel extensions, KEXTs. And you probably, I'm going to guess you have a KEXT that's clobbering things. So the best way to fix this is take this opportunity to back up your data, get everything off there you need, okay?
Okay.
And then rebuild the Mac. The beauty part is this is a very easy thing to do nowadays. Modern Macs, you can actually download the operating. You don't need a disk or anything. You can either, if you don't have an installer on the system, which most Macs do, if you, for instance, wipe the drive completely clean, you can install over the net. And it works fine. It's a little slow because you have to download El Capitan, or you probably go to Sierra or something, but you have to download it. But it'll do it, and it's really nice. That's a great feature. So
and
you
have to reinstall all the programs after you do.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say you do.
That's actually a little easier on a Mac than a Windows. Anyway.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad. Okay. If you buy the programs in the Mac App Store, and I always try to do that if I can, it's a simple thing just to go install. Go right down the list. You'll see all the apps you own in the App Store, and just install. Now, remember what I said earlier, though. Don't install anything you don't need. This is an opportunity to under-install. You know, only install stuff you know. I would say install as you go. You know, only install a program when you say, oh, I need that program. And you may find it's more reliable. There's something in there that's causing this glitch.
Okay.
I do think it could be, and it probably is, a flaky hard drive. Hard drives are the thing that always go bad first, or almost always go bad first, because they're the moving part that gets hot. That's why I like solid-state drives. They're a little bit more reliable, but spinning drives tend to go bad. And the way they go bad is exactly this. One sector goes bad. That happens to be on a kernel extension or a driver you need, and then it tries to load, and it goes, ah! And then the whole thing collapses.
Okay. Now, I actually have an SSD on it.
Good.
But I suppose that also could go bad as well.
It can. It can. It goes bad in a different way. Cells die. But SSDs, because this is a problem with SSDs, have a very smart algorithm in there called wear leveling that's really designed to eliminate that as a problem. It moves stuff around. It tries to make sure each cell gets written to the same number of times. And so I find SSDs be extremely reliable. They don't have the heating issues and the moving part issues that spinning drives. We didn't know, first when SSDs came out, there was some concern. These are not going to be reliable. But I think it's now been long enough we can say, yes, they're probably more reliable.
They're spoiled.
Yeah, and they're faster.
They are
faster.
I just remember on Windows that you could run some activity monitors, and sometimes that would tell you where it went.
Yeah, you can do a boot log on a Mac as well and figure out what's wrong. That might be, that might short-circuit the need to install everything. It's very good news that you can install in safe mode, because that really does tell you that there's something loading that is crashing your system. And
sure.
it's something that's not absolutely necessary. So what you want to do is to go into verbose startup on your Macintosh. Start up in verbose mode. And then once you do that, you'll have a very, very detailed log. Of course, it's going to crash. But then you go back into safe mode and you can read that log. So verbose mode when you start up is Command-V. Command-V.
Command-V is in Victor.
For verbose means talk a lot, and it's gonna log everything that happens. And of course, just as with Windows, if it's crashing on boot, the last line is the culprit.
That's your culprit. Okay.
That's what caused it, or at least one of the last few lines. It's possible that something started to load, next thing started to load, and then the first thing crashed it.
Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Yeah. Macs, it's funny because in Windows we know there's lots of ways to tweak this, and they're really made for people to get under the hood. A Mac is more like a Tesla. There's no user serviceable parts inside. It's if you know how to go into verbose mode and then get into single user mode and read the log, yeah, you can do that. It just takes a lot more work. Yeah, I guess we've got about 30 seconds left this hour. So let me tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour, catch up on what's been going on in the world around us. That'll give Kim Schaffer a chance to get some more calls on the board, 8888-ASK-LEO. Give our musical director, Michael Cozio, a chance to go get a cup of coffee, and we'll be back with more of your calls, 888-827-5536. And don't forget the website. If you hear something, we've been putting links up all hour, lots of links, at techguylabs.com. Our show today brought to you by those good folks at Quicken Loans, who do a nice thing, a mitzvah, as they say, for all the people, all the geeks watching, who don't want to get a home loan by going to a bank, who don't want to have to go through papers in their attic or call and get their pay stubs. They just want it to be fast and easy. Quicken Loans has created Rocket Mortgage just for those types. In other words, you and me. Rocket Mortgage allows you to do it all online. It takes minutes to get loan approval, whether you're buying a house or refinancing. This is the way to go. And by the way, you're getting a loan from the best lender in the country. Quicken Loans is phenomenal. J.D. Power customer satisfaction number one year after year in both loan origination and loan servicing. In fact, you can see that if you go to their webpage, quickenloans.com. But Rocket Mortgage, that gives them a special place in my heart because they're really thinking about the geeks. You can now go, like today, maybe you're going to go to an open house after the show. You can go to the open house. Honey, this is a nice house. What are they asking for it? That's that little? Honey, we could buy, let's buy this house. Okay. Now let's go to the bank, and a month later, we'll see if it's still for sale. No, no. You pull out your phone. You go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. They have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions, so all you have to do is give them permission. They'll get everything they need. They'll crunch the numbers. It's all online, so they can do it fast. Based on your income and your assets and your credits, they'll come back to you almost immediately with all the home loan options for which you qualify. You pick the loan that's right for you, and you're approved. It's done. In minutes. You could do it at an open house. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy if you want to find out more. Or maybe you're not buying a house at this moment, but bookmark that. Put that on your phone so you'll know when the time comes. You can just do it. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS. ConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. For the geek in all of us. Apply simply. Understand fully. And mortgage confidently with Rocket Mortgage. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy show. Oh, hi. I didn't see you come in. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, anything with a chip in it, smartwatches. I feel sort of bad. Among all the attention being paid now to the new iPhones, and October 27th, there'll be a rush to buy the new iPhone 10, a.k.a. the iPhone X. That will be available to buy in the Apple Store at midnight, October 27th, midnight Pacific time. Of course, I'll be getting up early, in the middle of the night and pressing refresh 100 times trying to get in there. I think it'll be very hard to buy. If you do manage to get it, the soonest you can have it delivered is November 3rd. Of course, we've got the new iPhone 8, which is really just a small, and I mean small, improvement on the iPhone 7. If you have an iPhone 7 or 7 Plus, I wouldn't feel any rush to get an iPhone 8. Although, I feel like nowadays, really, people buy iPhones not because they... I mean, there's two reasons people buy iPhones. They want the latest technology, right? So you'd buy a new one for that. Or the status symbol of owning the latest technology. And I think the tide has turned. It's really more of a status symbol more than anything else. Google announced its new phones this week. They've got a Pixel 2 and a Pixel XL 2. Kind of different phones manufactured by different companies. HTC made the Pixel 2. LG makes the Pixel XL 2. It's a bigger phone, no bezels. Same guts, same Snapdragon chip inside and all of that. But they'll look very different. I feel bad for this phone. I'm holding up the cutest little phone. It's like a 5-inch phone with a 5.5-inch screen. It's a And it was made by the guy who invented Android. So his name is Andy Rubin, and he created the company Android, sold it to Google, ran Android at Google for some time, left Google, and started a company called Essential, and made this phone, which was it's kind of interesting. It's a ceramic and titanium phone. It's very small, but it has the screen fills the front of it almost entirely. It's a nice little phone. The early reviewers Essential made a couple of mistakes. One was that they gave pre-production units to early reviewers, and there were some early problems. For instance, the camera, and I had this problem when I first got the phone. I did not get a pre-production. It's my policy to buy the phone just like you would. So I'll get the phone you'll get if you buy it. So I bought it and got it when it first came out about a month ago, I think. The camera would crash it. It was very slow to launch and would crash it. But they've updated this phone a number of times. But those early bad reviews, I think, killed the phone. We're learning now, it's an exclusive with Sprint. You can get an unlocked version from Essential or get it at your Sprint store. That Sprint's only sold 5,000 of these phones. You know, an iPhone will sell 50 million a quarter. You know, an iPhone typically sells 10 to 20 million a month. A month along, this phone sold 5,000 units. And I feel sad because it's kind of a nice phone in a lot of respects. It's a pretty little thing. But and it's Android, and it's kind of clean, pure Android. But just shows you, you can this is a tough business. I don't know how many millions of dollars went in developing this and manufacturing this. They probably have a warehouse full of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of phones just sitting there. They'll never sell them. But the funny thing is, now that they've fixed the camera and you know it's more mature and they've put some updates out, I really like it. There's one thing wrong with it, and it's going to be the problem with all the new phones. No headphone jack. What is wrong with people? Why? Apple started this. They weren't the first, but they really were the first big phone to not have a headphone jack in the iPhone 7. The new iPhones don't have headphone jacks. Now the new Google phones don't have headphone jacks. Why? Come on. What's wrong with a headphone jack? I can't think of any. Fortunately, Samsung still puts out headphone jacks. So their Note 8, which is also a lovely phone, really nice, has a headphone jack. I don't know. This phone, this Essential phone is nice because it's tiny compared to the giant Note 8 or the iPhone 8 or the new iPhone 10. It's tiny. Put it right in your pocket. And yet it has a giant screen and no headphone jack. I feel bad. This is what happens. 8888 Ask Leo, the tech world. It's cruel. Richard in Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good, but I'm having a major problem. I have been accessing the BBC TV guide for literally years. As of Thursday, it loads extremely slowly. And when I try to move from one time segment to another, it doesn't work, or again, it works very slowly. It works fine on my desktop, but on my laptop, it's a disaster.
Right? Well, let me ask, the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company?
The very one.
And the guide, are you getting the guide through the iPlayer? Where are you getting the guide?
Hang on, I'm just looking at it. Yes, the iPlayer.
The iPlayer. So that's a program BBC put out that you're not supposed to be able to use at all in the U.S.
We won't tell you how I do it, okay?
Okay.
And that's been working fine. And
yeah.
Even when I don't use that app and try to load it, it doesn't load properly. It takes a long, long time.
So here's the deal. The iPlayer was created for people in the U.K. who pay television license fees. The BBC, I guess reasonably, says, well, we don't want people who don't, you know, aren't paying their license fees to be able to access the iPlayer. So internationally, we won't let it be used. And the iPlayer checks to see if you're in the UK or not. You're using, you don't have to tell me, but I can guess, what's called a VPN.
Yes, sir.
A virtual private network, which has, it's kind of a clever system. You log into the VPN, their server's in the UK. So to the BBC, you appear to be in the UK. And they go, oh, well, you know, go ahead, use the iPlayer. But there are a couple of problems with this. One is you're using a VPN, and that's slow. There is an overhead layer using a VPN. You've been able to stream video, and it looks okay and everything?
Oh, endlessly. I've been doing it for about 5 or 6 years.
I would check. I'm not going to ask you who you use.
Okay.
Tunnel Bear is a very popular one for this purpose. I would check with the VPN company and see if there's anything going on. Because remember, everything you go through, you have to go through this tunnel to get to. Now, you said you're also able to access the guide without tunneling?
Oh, yeah. On my desktop, I get it instantaneously.
Right.
On my laptop, I started a call when I called you. It probably took 20 minutes into your show before the guide actually loaded.
Yeah. So I did the same thing. I went to bbc.co.uk/player/guide, and the guide loaded real fast for me.
Yep.
And I'm able to click on a link. Of course, it says, oh, I'm so sorry. This television program is only available to people in the UK. Terribly. They're very apologetic. Sorry, it's due to rights issues. Sorry. but mine's loading fast. So that's interesting that yours is loading slowly, even when you're not using the VPN. If it were only when you were using the VPN, then I would say, well, call the VPN company and see if there's some slowdowns going on. And by the way, the BBC is starting to try to block VPNs and things like that. There are ways around this. For instance, Netflix, which also has geographic restrictions, people can use, if you're traveling, you can use a VPN to get your U.S. Netflix account. But Netflix is trying to block that as well.
Right.
I'm not sure why. What browser are you using?
I've used both Internet Explorer and Chrome.
This is loading very quickly for me on Chrome here. So I'm not sure what's going on. Why would one website load slower? That's an interesting question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So other websites load normally?
Absolutely. When this started on Thursday, I tried about 5 different ones on both browsers. No problem whatever.
Very interesting. And it's loading fine for me. So, thank you. I'm not sure why it would suddenly...
I even clicked their help. There's a help link at the bottom of the page somewhere. I forgot where I saw it.
Yeah.
That doesn't do anything.
It doesn't load.
I tried to do that when I got on the phone with you.
So BBC's doing something, but what are they doing?
Really? But on this particular, you know, I only have two computers, so I can't test this on yet a third one, or
right,
at least
but two different computers. Now, one third test you could do is to take one of the laptop out and go on somebody else's network and see if it loads slowly there too.
I can try that.
That would be worth testing, because that would, if it does load normally, that would isolate it to your network. If it loads slowly, then it would isolate it to your account or your system. My guess is it would load quickly on somebody else's network.
So, well, but the desktop is on the same network.
That's what I'm saying. Because you're on the same network, both the desktop and the laptop are having problems. But if you took the laptop somewhere else and it loaded fast, then you would say, something's going on.
Sorry, I'm confused. It's loading perfectly on the desktop.
Oh, it does load all right on the desktop.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's only on the laptop that it loads.
Only on the laptop. And I've used it, and I've been using this for years. And then Thursday, when I wanted to watch a thing called Question Time, which you may know.
Love Question
Time.
Get
it. And then I said, well, okay, it's a glitch. I'll try it tomorrow, meaning Friday. Didn't work then, and it hasn't worked this morning when I've been waiting to talk with you.
So something's going on with your laptop.
Yep.
It's weird that it would only affect one site. But that site might be using, I don't know what technologies they're using. They're maybe using something that isn't working right on your system, that other sites don't use, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So the first thing to do is, if you don't already have a separate account on your Windows machine, like an administrator account or to create a new account, log into it and see if it works okay in that account.
Okay.
What
I'll
that does is it isolates it to your profile. And then resetting the browser might fix it. It's interesting that both IE and Chrome have the same problem.
Yeah, because first I thought it was Chrome, because right. That's the one I use almost exclusively. Yeah. But when I tried it on IE, the exact same experience.
Desktop wired and the laptop Wi-Fi? Both Wi-Fi?
Laptop is Wi-Fi.
Okay, so maybe it's the Wi-Fi. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. One other way to test this would be to wire your laptop to your router and see if it's better.
That I'll definitely try, sure. It's not hard to do here.
I'm just thinking, basically, you get the gist of the troubleshooting is to eliminate possibilities and see if it gets better, and slowly narrow it down to kind of what's going on. You might just, one thing you can do is reset the browser. You'll lose all your bookmarks and everything, but you can reset the browser. Do it with IE, because you probably don't use that much, and see if that fixes it. And I'm wondering you don't need a VPN to access the guide in the browser, so that's not it. I doubt the VPN, maybe you've been blacklisted, I don't know. Your IP
As I said, I loaded this first before I called you just to anticipate what you were suggesting. No VPN, just straight out loading the program, and it might have taken 20 minutes just to get the guide.
Oh yeah, there's something wrong with it. Yeah, because I did the same thing here, and it's fast. So
yeah, I don't know. It's almost instantaneous.
It's unique to that computer. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. I got to run, unfortunately, but there are some troubleshooting tips. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK, Leo, the phone number. Manesh, Riverside, California, Leo Laporte here. Hi, Manesh.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay, long-time listener, watcher, 20 years.
Wow, that is a long time. Thank you. I appreciate it.
From the tech TV days, I guess.
The 20th anniversary is coming up.
You already answered my second question, which was about I was going to look for a wireless Bluetooth speaker without a power cord. But then I looked up Anker, which you just mentioned.
They make a very nice one, yeah. I use the Fugu, F-U-G-U. Bose makes a bunch of them. Actually, it's F-U-G-O-O, I think, Fugu. But there are a lot of choices.
Yeah. I found that. So that was my original question I talked to Kim, what I asked her was... can you just summarize, like you mentioned earlier in the show, about the questions people ask now. Nobody calls for camcorders anymore. just go over, since you started back in 92, what people ask, and then compared to, what they asked 5 years
ago. Oh, it's been an interesting evolution.
And then what they ask now. Yeah, just to summarize.
I started doing this in 92, answering tech questions on the radio. And, of course, at the time, we never answered any internet questions. It was really mostly how to use a Windows computer. And the big question, and if you've been around for a while, this might ring a bell, IRQ conflicts were a massive issue. So in the
remember that one.
You remember that? No.
So I started at DOS.
In the early days DOS. of PCs, they didn't have enough interrupt lines, so they would double up on the serial ports. So 1 and 3, 4 and 2 would have the same interrupts, and that meant if you had something on the serial port 1 and something on serial port 3, that you would have an interrupt conflict and things wouldn't work. And it was just a nightmare thing. By the way, we've eliminated serial ports. USB solved that problem. Thank you.
Yes.
Then of course, we started getting a lot of questions when the internet started to emerge of how to get the internet on my computer. And we don't get that anymore because every computer comes with the internet. But I remember the folks at O'Reilly used to sell a boxed product called Internet in a Box that had the Mosaic browser, that would allow you to use a slip connection with your ISP. This is how far back we go. It was you really had to want to get on the internet, but you know what? When you got there, they had animated GIFs, and then there was this thing called Yahoo that had a directory of every web page you could find on Yahoo. That's changed. Trumpet Windsock. Mike B's reminding me. That's the software that came in the Internet in a Box. Trumpet Windsock.
So, but then there's hardware too, right? We, in the early days, we spent a lot of time talking about monitors. People don't really think about monitors because most of the time when you get a computer now, it comes with a built-in monitor. Even a desktop often has it all in one. So people don't ask about monitors much anymore. Let's see. You have video camcorders. That was a big category that came and went. In fact, frankly, I think we're headed that way with cameras in general. Smartphone cameras have gotten so good that I don't know if people are buying. It's funny because I've observed, here's where I've observed this. Over the years, we've done appearances. I've shown up at, you know, various stores and events. And in the early days, I remember at first people took pictures. Then they said, well, let's get a picture with film cameras, very fast. You'd raise the camera, press the button, you got a picture. You wouldn't know if it came out, so you might take two. But they're expensive, so don't take too many. Right, then digital cameras started coming out around 2000. And the earliest digital cameras, I'll never forget, these people would come with these Sony, they called them Mavica cameras. They saved the picture to a floppy disk. So they would take a picture, and it would go, and it would take a half minute. Then they would look at the picture, and then they'd come back and say, can we get another one that didn't come out? So that, I'm glad that era is gone. Then the digital camera era, and a lot of people had point-and-shoot cameras. That went pretty well after people got used to them. And then, nowadays, people very rarely will have a camera. When they come to the studio to visit or they just want a picture, it's almost always a smartphone. So I think except for hobbyists and aficionados, photo bugs, we're probably going to see the end of point-and-shoot cameras. I don't see a big growth in point-and-shoot cameras over the next couple of years. GPS units, standalone GPS units. You got to feel for companies like Garmin and TomTom, who were king of the world, sold a lot of those units. Every car comes with a GPS, and who cares if it does anyway, because it's in my phone too. The smartphone's been the single most disruptive technology I've seen in these 40 years. It's really transformed a lot of things. And I have an AOL disk here for you if you'd like as a reward.
I have the same AOL address that I did in 1996.
You get 1,000 free hours with this one.
Yeah.
Remember those? AOL.
You get those.
The AOL disk used to come in the mail every day. They make great coasters. Hey, great question.
My first time calling. First time calling. I actually got through, so thank you, Ken.
Manesh, what's your favorite technology, like Zip Disks, that isn't around anymore? Is there one that you...
iOmega
Zip Disks. Remember those?
Yeah.
And when that died, it died fast. There's still people around who have backups on Zip Disks. You can't...
Yeah.
You can't do anything with it.
It didn't last very long, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That's, for me, it's part of the fun of this job, is it's constantly changing, but it can be frustrating, too.
Well, we appreciate you. Your voice is so soothing on the weekend, so
thank
I always
you,
look forward to it.
Oh, it's really nice to know you're listening. What a great question. Nobody's asked me that. That's fun. Thank you. Take care. Yeah, this is what happens when you do anything for a long time. Things change, but nothing changes faster than technology. Nothing. I was talking with my wife today. She was doing a genetic test. I mean, you spit in a vial, you mail it in, and they do a genetic analysis on you. And I'm thinking, this is like science fiction. But this ain't anything yet. Get ready, because we've been through the information revolution. It's starting to slow down a little bit now, right? You know, the processors aren't getting much faster. Phones aren't getting much faster. But there's another revolution, a biological revolution that's coming that is going to, I think, make the information revolution pale. There is a technology out right now, and it's getting perfected, called CRISPR, CRISPR. This was a huge breakthrough in genetic engineering. It is basically the ability to cut and paste DNA, just like you do in a computer. You take a DNA, you snip a little sequence out, you paste it into another DNA. This technology is advancing very rapidly and will give us the ability to diagnose genetic illnesses in preborns and fix them, even fix things in adults. You want blue hair? No problem. You want a tree that glows at night? No problem. This is just around the corner. Our kids are going to experience a revolution over the next 20 and 30 years in genetics, in biology and biotech, that I think is going to make all of this information technology seem very old-fashioned. There's no question, things are speeding up, aren't they? 8888-ASK-LEO, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls. Oh, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, right after this. And Chris Marquardt is back. We both went on vacation.
And we both went to places where there's amazing wines.
You went to Tuscany. I went to France.
Yep.
Now, the interesting thing is, now, Chris and Monica, his significant other, are both professional photographers. You took your folks, and you decided not to bring your cameras.
We both thought it would probably be nicer to give my parents a bit more time, which we did, and we decided to leave the big professional cameras at home and just bring our smartphones.
Awesome.
And that was it was a good and it was a grounding experience because you get kind of spoiled with these big sensors and with big fast lenses and things, but shooting with a smartphone just is a much more basic thing. It's a much more you don't, for example, with I'm on a 6S still, so I don't even have a zoom lens on it. So I have to walk instead of zoom. And that changes the dynamics of photography, that changes the kind of photos that you get. And it forces you into becoming a bit more creative. So that's a very good experience.
I think I would go through withdrawal, though.
But a bit more time as well. So
I think it's a really good thing to do.
Especially as we had amazing weather in Tuscany. Yeah, so yeah. There was a bit of a withdrawal. But
So we have a photo review, which is a little overdue. We asked people to take pictures illustrating the word or concept shadow. And we got 4 pages of great images in our Flickr group.
We got over 100 submissions. Nice. Amazing.
But yes. Chris has narrowed it down to 3 that he'd like to talk about today.
It was a tough choice, but I chose 3 pictures that, well, technically don't really depict shadow. So it's kind of some of the outliers, but I still like them. First one is by Randy Reed, titled Sun Shadows. And if you look at that photo, it's more of a reflection than a shadow, right?
It's kind of a silhouette, trees. Which I guess is a shadow of sorts.
Well, you see the shadow side of the trees, but then what you see on the water is the reflection. It's beautiful, clear, very still water. It doesn't move much, so you get a more of a mirror-like reflection. But then when you look at the position of the sun and how it's a backlit pair of trees, and the sun would probably cast the shadows in almost the same spot that the trees are. So it's kind of the shadow of the trees. I like this this double thing going on here. So that's the first one. Second picture that I chose, again, it's been taken through the solar eclipse. It's by Steve, called Moon Shadow.
This and one's beautiful. Boy, is this gorgeous.
Picture of the sun. It's a series of pictures of the sun with the moon moving in different parts of the picture. You have, in different stages, you see different stages of the solar eclipse. But then, again, the sun is the light source. The moon gets in front of the sun, so the moon casts a shadow on the Earth. That's what we see. But, of course, you also see the shadow side of the moon. So, again, this same double thing going on here.
The other reason
it's a nice montage of different shots.
We all took pictures of the eclipse, right? And it was hard to get a unique or something interesting. And he, I think he did. He really got a really nice series of images. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sequential images of the eclipse from zero to almost totality.
Almost, yep. And the third one is by Bianca Luna. Title, I don't really get underscore.
You hate it. When
needs a better title.
Yeah, but people don't title their photos. It's pretty, though.
Anyway, it's a pretty picture. It's a sunset at the sea, I guess, and it's a person standing like one of these forced perspective type of shots where you, where that person holds the sun in their hands, just being placed so that it looks like that. It's a beautiful, warm sunset. Again, same as in the first one, we're not really seeing a shadow of the person. We're seeing the shadow side of the person because it's a backlit. All of them were backlit. We mostly see a reflection of that person in the wet sand in the front. But again, we're looking at the shadow side. So there's again this kind of double meaning thing going on. And all that's what those three pictures have in common. And still good outside the box thinking there. So kudos. Good job.
Well, and thanks to everybody, all 100 of you who submitted images.
All the 106 people who submitted something.
Really, some really nice images. You can go to the Flickr pool and look at them all. If you go to Flickr.com and look for the Tech Guy group, that's where we put our images up. Really nice job, everybody. So you know what
and
that
I have
means.
A new assignment.
Yes. We have a new assignment.
Well, fall has fallen and the days are getting shorter, so I thought we'd make short the next assignment. So 1 month to submit a picture that depicts or describes or shows the concept of short.
Short? Ah, short days, short people.
Well,
short attention span.
Lots of.
There's lots.
Possible.
lots of shorts out there. We don't ever narrow it down. We let you figure it out, but here's how it works. You take a picture. You can upload as many as one a week, so you'll have the chance to upload four different images. Flickr is a free photo sharing site. I guess it's now a Verizon / Yahoo site.
Well, it's still there. So we
it's still there and works great, and I still love it.
Yeah.
FLICKR.com. And if you don't have a password, just use somebody else's because I guess everybody's is available now. Inside Flickr, Yahoo joke. But do when you upload the picture to Flickr, tag it with the word short and then submit it to the Tech Guy group. You need to join the Tech Guy group. All of this is free, by the way. There's no charge. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will welcome you. You'll know it's a Tech Guy group because it's a picture of me. There's about, I don't know, 11,000 members, thousands of photos. It's a very active group. But each week, just the idea of this, it's not a contest. There's no prize. The idea is just take pictures. If you need some inspiration, go out there and try to find pictures that illustrate the word short and upload them to our Tech Guy group. And in about a month, we will do another photo review with Chris Marquardt here. Welcome back. We missed you. Fortunately,
well,
you recorded
you
shows, although we didn't miss a single show. You worked really
That's
hard
true.
And got everything recorded ahead of time. So thank you. Another workshop planned? When's your next workshop?
Well, I have just released an updated version of the Discover Lightroom workshop. So there's a Lightroom CC workshop up at discoverlightroom.com if anyone wants to get an updated brand new version of that.
That is really useful. And, of course, don't forget the free PDF he gives away that helps you triage your images. What is it, 1,000 pictures in an hour? What is this?
1hour1000pics.com.
1hour1000pics, PICX.com. Get that. That's free. And if you're interested, Chris does a lot of workshops all over the world, some fun stuff. I know you're going to do the Svalbard trip again, I think, right?
It's in the future, but sometime in the future. Morocco is going to be very interesting next year.
Oh, how fun. Go to discoverthetopfloor.com to find out about that. And thank you, Chris Marquardt. We'll see you next time.
See you.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Tom in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Tom, Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. I'm not in North Carolina now. I'm actually in South Carolina.
Well, you see, if you drive long enough and we keep you on hold long enough, you'll be in Florida before too long.
Well, no, I'm heading to Atlanta.
All right.
Virginia.
Well, I'm glad we got you before you got to Atlanta. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm basically a stay-home guy that works at home, and I do desktop sharing around the world with different customers and stuff for a company. We'll just leave out of it. And I'm getting ready to move, and my family wants to move rural, and I need high-speed internet. We can't find anything that would tell us what high-speed internet is when we're moving to or anything. And my real estate agent keeps on finding these houses. Well, there's a cable coming through the wall, so it must be good. And I'm like, that's 1974 copper wire. That's not.
Well, I will. I'll tell you what. I will. This is a. It sounds like it's true for your business, but it's true for me in general. I will not move somewhere where I can't get high speed internet. That is just out of the question. Unfortunately, a lot of rural areas do not have that option. Now, there's one place you can go that will give you, I think, information about your locality that I use all the time. It's DSL Reports at dslreports.com.
That doesn't seem to help. I mean,
well, if it's really rural, there might not be any reviews from that area.
Right. Well, what we've actually have to do is actually find the cable company there in that by the location or whatever ISP, and actually try to sign up for a subscription for these places. And then sometimes they'll turn around and say, yeah, we'll be out there tomorrow. And they're like, okay, we can't pay for it because we're not going to put a bid on a house until we know what you can bid on it.
Yeah. Well, that's one way to do it. It seems like a more trouble than it needs to be. A lot of times most internet service providers will have a front page where you could say, here's the address. Do you provide service to that address? My experience, however, with at least Comcast, the cable company out here, is it's not always accurate. So yeah. I could see why you might want to call them and even make an appointment to get a truck roll because, frankly, they'll say, oh, yeah, until the, you know, comes down to actually setting it up and they go, oh, no.
we've gone down to the point where I found fiber optics going along the road, and we started following the fiber optics and ended up in the front door of a nuclear power plant.
Whoa! But maybe they'll let you borrow a cup of internet from time to time.
Yeah, well, it didn't look good because I was driving a 15-passenger van with windows all darked out.
The power plant. Yeah, that sounds like trouble.
They showed up with weapons in front of me.
Yeah, so next time like, oh, take
your fiber.
Next time take the Pinto. Don't don't take the van. Somebody in the chat room is saying broadbandnow.com is a place.
Broadbandnow.com.
We'll do ISPs by area. I'm not familiar with that. I always use DSL reports, but if you can't find anything there, that's not good. It says broadbandnow.com says find every internet provider in your area. It's a database of broadband providers. That's cool. I'm not familiar with this. That's nice. Now, one of the things they're going to mention on this is satellite, and that's always an option for you as long as you can get a view of the southern sky. There's companies like WildBlue, HughesNet, DirecTV's HughesNet, and others, Dish. Satellite tends to be expensive, high latency, and often low bandwidth caps. So that's something to be aware of. But in many rural areas, that's the best you can get. If they've got cable and your cable provider out there provides cable internet, that usually does pretty well. DSL has one flaw that makes it difficult in rural areas. The farther you are away from the central office, the worse the DSL gets, the speeds get. And past about 2 miles, it doesn't work at all. So rural areas usually don't get very good DSL. Your cable or maybe a microwave wireless internet service provider might be your best bet, depending on how rural it is.
Right. I've been looking at that, and satellite is out of the question.
For what you do, I think the latency would probably be an issue because your desktop sharing is going to be difficult if it moves, you know, a second or two behind what's actually happening. This broadband now looks really good. I want to thank the chat room for coming up with that. I haven't seen this before, but it looks pretty good.
I have to deal with latency with when I hook up to like China or India or Poland and all those different places. So, but I can't have the latency on my side. My company just basically said I can't go anywhere without internet.
Yeah. Well, that at least you can tell your wife we can't move here because I won't have a job.
Yeah, but that's tying us up really hard because I've got children that want to start raising animals and stuff like that.
Well, come to Petaluma. We got the best of both worlds. I have 10 gigabit fiber into our offices here from SonicNet, and there's cows right outside our door.
Yeah, but cows, pigs, chickens.
We got Future Farmers of America out here. We got 4-H. I think you'd do all right.
Cost of living's a little bit different, too.
It's a little high, yeah. You pay the price for raising pigs.
Yeah.
Good luck to you. This site is pretty cool. Broadbandnow.com was created, it says, in 2012 by Dwayne Anderson and Nick Reese, who were looking for a simple way to find broadband in rural areas. Exactly what you say. And I guess it's kind of a directory of broadband that's not owned by any particular company, which I like. I wouldn't necessarily go there for reviews, but certainly to enter in your new address and get some sense of what kind of connectivity you can get, then it probably would be worth it if you're really serious about the house to make sure you can get it installed out there. For instance, there are areas out here where, which is pretty well serviced by Comcast, but you're 100 feet from the nearest pole. And we had this experience a couple of houses ago. We were just far enough that Comcast hadn't wired it for cable. And when we contacted them, they said, well, we'll trench out to your house if you pay us. But it's expensive. I think it was thousands of dollars. I think it was $5,000 for 100 feet. So we decided to do without cable at that location. 8888 Ask Leo. Good luck. Get a great move there, Tom. Tim, Long Beach is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I've been a big fan since Screensavers.
Thank you.
I have a question. I bought an iPad Pro last Christmas and a Lexar jump drive so I can download photos directly to the camera roll because my Mac is old, doesn't have the newer version of iTunes. And with iOS 11, it has ceased to work.
Oh, you got the camera connection kit that Apple sells?
No.
Okay, so...
Well, I probably do, but...
It's a dongle that has a lightning port at one end and either a USB adapter or a, depends on which one you get, SD card reader. And the idea would be that you could then put the Lexar drive into the SD card reader or use an SD card reader on the USB port. But it's very limited what they can do. This is not an ideal situation.
Yeah, I'm a semi-professional photographer. Yeah. I do a lot of nature photos, and this was an easy way to show.
This was the stopping point for me. I was really hoping I could use the new iPad Pro instead of a laptop. During travel only, I have access to my desktop at home, but when I'm traveling, something really light and use it to at least go through pictures and so forth. First of all, camera raw iPads don't understand camera raw, so you have to use JPEG, which is for pros, not as ideal. And then this camera connection kit doesn't work quite as hoped. I haven't tried it with iOS 11, but I ultimately gave up this hope. There is one thing you should be aware of. What camera company do you shoot with?
I use Canon. I use 1DX.
Nice. You got the top of the line. So Canon does have an app, an iOS app, and this is what I ended up using, that I can wirelessly transmit photos to my iPad. So at the end of every day, and this works with Sony, Canon, Nikon, there's one for Leica. That at the end of the day, it uses Wi-Fi, so it's relatively quick. You pair your camera with your iPad, and then you at the end of the day, you load up your camera and on the iPad, pick the photos you want to transfer over, and then go have lunch because it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
But it does do it.
These are already edited raw photos.
Well, raw, the iPad's not going to understand raw at all, period.
I know. They're edited in RAW, saved to JPEG.
Oh, you want to just keep a copy of them maybe to show people, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess the next best thing would be iCloud Photo Drive. Put them up on the photos on your Mac, and then they'd copy over to your iPad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So the big issue, hold on a second, I had to take a break because of the top of the other. So the big issue is just that camera connection kit, I guess, is not doing what you want it to do. So yeah. What were you doing? You were editing them on a computer.
Right.
And then
load them onto the jump drive.
Put them on the jump drive, and then you're trying to get them onto your iPad.
Yeah, and it worked perfect. You just said external drive, move to camera roll, and it did it in just in seconds. And now they want you to go load everything onto the cloud.
Yeah. Thank you, Apple.
Yeah. And I mean, that was
I gave up on this for this exact reason. Yeah, I know. There's got to be a way to do it. You don't want to do it in the cloud.
No. And I spent probably 8 hours yesterday Googling every version of question I could, and there's not an answer out there. So,
do you have a Mac?
Yes, but it's an old 2008 Mac Pro.
So you could connect the iPad to the Mac, right? Or do you not have a late enough version of iTunes on that to do that?
Don't have a late enough version.
Dang nabbit. Yeah, because if you had iTunes 11 or 12, you would just use it to transfer it to the iPad over a USB cable.
Now, is there a way of getting back the old iOS on the iPad?
No.
No,
they won't let you do that.
Man.
So this broke with iOS 11?
Yeah.
Let me just Google this. I didn't realize that. So, looks like they still sell. All right. So this should still work in iOS 11. They still sell a camera connector. Let me look at this. You know, I gave up, and I haven't tried it with iOS 11. I gave up just because it was mostly because it wouldn't support RAW.
Yeah, see, that didn't bother me too much because I do all the editing.
Yeah, you're doing it on the desktop. Apple. So here's a product. Yeah. I'll try to find one that works with iOS 11.
Yeah, I put in the jump drive, and it reads the photos. You select them. You go to move it. And as soon as you hit the move button, it shuts it off.
Now, there is a firmware update. I do remember that you need to get a firmware update. Were you offered the firmware update, believe it or not, to the dongle?
Yes. It's all up to date, yeah. Okay.
Well, you know what? They're still selling this dongle. I don't understand why it wouldn't work. Maybe you have an older one that's not. Did you get the USB 3 dongle?
Yeah.
Well, they still
64 gigabytes.
Yeah, they still sell it. I don't understand what's not working. Anybody in the chat room have any? Oh, yeah. Here's another good one. This is actually what I also do. This Lightroom Mobile. If you're using Adobe Lightroom to do the processing, are you?
No, I use Photoshop.
Lightroom has, Photoshop won't do this. Lightroom has a companion app on the iPad, and you can say, sync my photos from my desktop to the companion app. That works quite well, wirelessly.
Yeah. What's amazing is the photos that I did have on there, they're still there. And
it sounds like it's the camera connection kit. It sounds like it's the camera connection kit is not working. You know, the dongle's not working properly. You might. I hate to make you get a new dongle. They're not cheap. Apple says the Lightning to USB 3 camera adapter works with both the new 12.9 inch iPad Pro and the. I wonder if iOS 11.
Yeah, this is the Lexar jump drive.
Yeah, the jump drive is not it. Does the jump drive have a lightning connector on it?
Yeah.
Oh.
64 gigabyte with the lightning connector.
Yeah. Get the Apple one. The Apple one works with iOS 11. I don't know what the Lexar one does. So Apple sells two. They sell their Lightning on one end, and the one you probably want is USB 3 to Lightning. And then you could put a card reader in it or whatever, and it would just copy it over. I think that's probably the case that the Lexar is not compatible right now with iOS 11. I didn't realize you Lexar made an adapter.
So it's not going to ask me to put it on the cloud then?
No.
Okay.
What you need is an adapter that will let you copy it directly. So Lexar sells a... Oh, that's cool. It's my guess that the Lexar is not updated for iOS 11. Now, what I would do is check with Lexar and see if they've got an update to it.
Yeah, they had an update just 4 days ago.
Yeah, but it didn't fix it, did it?
No.
Okay, so now I understand what the issue is. Yeah, that's a $50 reader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's my best guess, is it there's some compatibility issue. Because Apple's camera connector does work with iOS 11. So that's what I thought you were using. That's why I was puzzled. Yeah, I would guess that the Lexar, they did something. And
I'll have to get one of those then.
Yeah, the Apple's actually cheaper than the Lexar.
And if you're interested, I know you love photography. I'd like you to check out my site.
Yeah.
It's just Tim Foltz, FOLTZ, photography.com.
What do you like to take pictures of?
Mostly nature, but nice. I mean, I've done everything from birth, well, not right after birth, I should say, engagements, surfing, but mostly wildlife, birds.
Oh, nice. Oh, beautiful. With that nice 1X, man, that 1D. Nice.
Yeah, mostly with the 500 and an extender.
Nice. Wow. So it makes it 1,000, right? It's a 2X extender?
No, 700.
700. All right.
No, the 1.4.
1.4 extender, yeah. Nice. God, these are great. Beautiful, thank Tim. You. Beautiful.
I put in a lot of hours.
Yeah, I can tell. That's a lot of work. Wildlife photography, a lot of work.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I appreciate your help.
My pleasure. Nice to talk to you. Take
care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Our show today brought to you by Fracture. Oh, man, I love these Fracture prints. Let me just show you the big one. I'll kick it off with the big one. So Fracture is a home decor, photo decor company that's out to rescue your best pictures from the digital ether. I know you've got great images, but they're on a hard drive or on your phone or there's somewhere you can't really access it. Maybe you print out a photo book. How often do you look at that? But if you've got an image you're proud of, you love your kids, or you got a family photo you want to put up on the wall, this is the best way to keep those photos alive, to really give them a presence in your house. Last vacation, last spring, I took a picture I'm proud of in the Galapagos, and we got it printed on Fracture on the biggest size they do. This is 21.6 inches by 28.8 inches. Look how big this thing is. But I love this picture. And I tell you what, printing it on glass pops the contrast, makes the color richer, and it really brings the picture to life. Look at that. As soon as we've done with this ad, I'm going to put this on my wall. The nice thing about these Fracture images, they come ready to hang. Here's the smallest they make. This is 4.8 by 6.4. And so they have little small ones. And I left this in, this is how it comes in the Fracture box, so it's protected. This is a graduation, eighth grade graduation picture. It comes in here. Now, see, there's a little screw, and on the back of it, there's a mount. So it's ready to mount. You don't need to frame it. It's done. It's ready to mount. These pictures, Lisa processed this with a filter, so, you know, this isn't the natural color, but it really comes out in Fracture. Now, notice I have a frame on these. You don't have to have a frame. They do 4x3 aspect ratios, so anything in your Instagram, they have square, or Facebook, anything coming out of your camera phone, you just print as normal. We do a lot of stuff with 3x2 aspect ratios out of our camera, and you just put a little border around it. It's a simple thing you do. You go in the advanced editor, you click undo, and you can choose your crop, select your grayscale. Yeah, they'll even do black and white. This is a picture of my kids at Henry's high school graduation. This is a little bit bigger. And see how nice that looks in black and white? And I put a little black frame around, but you can choose the color or not have a frame at all if you choose. I just think these are beautiful. Let me pop it out so you can see what it looks like on the wall. Now, we're going to get 15% off your first order They're very reasonable. Made in Gainesville, Florida, from U.S. source materials. It's a carbon-neutral factory. They recycle. Every image comes with a 60-day happiness guarantee, so you're sure to love your order. And I just think they look so great. This, don't tell anybody, but this is going to be a Christmas gift. I'm gonna give these to Grandma's going to get this one. Isn't that nice? Go to fracture.me and use the code TECH15 at checkout, and you'll get 15% off your first order. I really love what they do. Fracture Me. Here's an image. This is the train trip up to Machu Picchu in the Peruvian Andes. And it just, I just feel like I'm there when I look at it. You probably can't really tell on the video, but it just feels like you're there. There's something magical about putting it on glass. Fracture.me. And don't forget that offer code, TECH15, for 15% off your first order. We thank Fracture for their support and for bringing my pictures to life. I'm really happy about that. Fracture.me. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, well, tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that new stuff coming out. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Rick from Alabama is next. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm all right. Hey, I got accolades for one thing. I got a HP Pavilion laptop, 14 years old.
Wow.
Still works.
What is
screen's a little sketchy, but, you know, it still works. It won't load, you know, 8 or 10 windows, but it still works.
That is very impressive. Now, let's see. It's a 14-year-old laptop, and I say that laptop years are equal to 15 human years. So that would mean that that is a 210-year-old laptop.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that they say that laptops don't last more than about 3.
No. How heavy is it?
Well, the battery died about 1 year into
That's what goes first, of course. It's like the knees. The battery is like the knees. It goes first. You know, it's funny. Lenovo knows that people have a nostalgia for these old laptops. They just released a 25th anniversary ThinkPad. It isn't as big and heavy as the first ThinkPad 25 years ago, but it has the same kind of look, which is kind of cool.
It's a 16-inch screen with a keypad, too.
That thing is a monster.
It was well worth the money I spent for it, and I got it out of the box on the floor. I think that's what they call it, OBO.
Ah, yeah. So somebody had already even used it.
Yeah,
it's a demo model.
Yeah. So hey, you know, I'm thinking maybe HP owes me some.
You're like the guy who has the truck that's got a million miles on it, right?
Exactly.
HP needs to do an ad with you.
Well, anyway, two things. One, my first computer was a TI-99 4A.
Except, by the way, HP doesn't want to do an ad with you because they want everybody to buy a new laptop every few years. They don't. There's nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't want unlike Chevy, they don't want to celebrate how long their laptops last. So you started back in the early days of the TI-99.
I also got their first printer. 4415.
You're not still using that, are you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it still works.
I think American pickers need to come to your house.
Yeah. I think they owe me some money.
What can I do for you?
Okay, my question is, first of all, two questions. What is factory image?
So there is a version of Windows that Microsoft makes, Windows 10. In fact, you go to Microsoft's website and download what they call the Media Creator and create a USB key that's a pure Windows 10 install. But it doesn't have any of the features that, by the way, some of these features are not features, but it doesn't have any of the features that HP or Dell or Lenovo or any of the PC manufacturers adds. As you know, when you get a PC from a company, they're, you know, they're going to have some trial wear on there. They're going to have some custom software. HP put some auto updating software and all of that. So there's a special version of Windows that HP puts on your laptop. That's called the factory image. And usually that's the one that either, you know, in the days when you bought that laptop 15 years ago came as a probably a bunch of floppy disks or as a DVD with a laptop. They don't do that anymore. Microsoft doesn't like it because they think it's a recipe for piracy. So what they do when you get a new laptop these days is it says, oh, quick, get a USB key and make a recovery image. That's the same thing as the factory image. The recovery image will put your computer back to the way it was the day it came from the factory. And that is the you know, the base installation of Windows 10 plus whatever the manufacturer added to it before they shipped it to you.
Now, I'm with you all that, but now I got to switch gears on you because you're still on the laptop, but now I'm talking on my desktop.
Doesn't matter. It's the same.
Okay, so it doesn't really matter. Okay.
Yeah. So factory image is exactly the same no matter what kind of computer.
Okay, so it's a desktop, so I can still plug in USB port thing. Okay, and that's good. Now, my very last question is, I have like 6 CD rewrite discs. Now, how do I erase them?
That's an interesting question. I don't think you really erase them. You just can reuse them.
Okay, but if I put it in the computer and say, if I put it in the disk rewrite and I tell it I want to, because they're...
I guess you can erase it. Yeah, you put it in the rewriter, use the software. You have to have the software that came with those, you know, with that rewriter.
Okay, I'm not explaining myself very well. These are disks that I used to download, let's say...
Okay, you want to destroy them?
Yes.
Just cut them up.
Well, okay, I'm still not answering.
Well, you can erase them, but you can't erase them permanently. I wouldn't if there's something on there you don't want anybody to see, then the best thing to do would be to grind them up. In fact, you can buy shredders now that will shred CDs. There are these rewritables work. There's two ways to write a CD. There's disk at once and there's track at once. And the rewritables load a special driver that makes them look like a hard drive, like a regular drive, and then you can write a track at a time. You just drag something onto it and it writes it. It erases the same way. You just erase the contents of that drive. My point, though, is if there's something on there you don't want anybody to see, erasing that CD using that technique will not actually delete the data. It will release the space for reuse, but you'd need to wipe the disk. Maybe possible that DBAN, which is the free wiping program I recommend, it stands for Derek's Boot and Nuke. DBAN. It's a program you can run on your PC. I think it's even a DOS program. It runs fine on Windows. That will overwrite the data, then write it again. I think if you have the right driver, the special driver loaded for that disk track at once writing, you should be able to do that. The computer, I think, just thinks it's a hard drive. So CD Burner XP has an erase disk setting, things like that. But my qualm is if there's something on there that you don't want anybody to see, that's not going to really get rid of it. Frankly, you can buy, they're under, 50 cents each? Shred them. That's the best thing to do. And then if you're really paranoid, take little bits of them and throw them in different trash cans all over the city. And then nobody will be able to reconstruct it. I wonder what he's up to. 8888, ask Leo, Victor St. Louis, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Victor.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm out here trucking. I listen to you all the time. I'm working with an HP all-in-one touchscreen. And when I went to 10, the sound quit. I have no sound on the Beats audio. But it does recognize my Bluetooth, so I can listen to it on Bluetooth speakers.
Oh, good.
My grandson said he can fix it. He's 11. So he comes over to the house.
Uh-oh.
And brings up, I bought an iMac because it works. But he brings it up on there, and it's you, Mr. Report. He says, this guy can tell you how to fix it.
You say, well, I know his number. I have his number. I'll just call him directly.
I told him I listen to you all the time.
You know, kids, I'll tell you, kids learn everything on YouTube these days. My son, who's a little older than your grandson, and my son's 22, has learned to cook, and he cooks really well. And I said, where'd you get all these recipes? He says, YouTube. So hang on. I'm going to take a break. We got some commercials to do, but when we come back, I will endeavor to duplicate that YouTube video and help you get your audio working again. I have some ideas about what might have gone wrong. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking to Victor, St. Louis, Missouri. Victor's a close personal friend of Leo Laporte. You tell your 11-year-old grandson, you know this guy. I know him. I'll call him up. So your Bluetooth works, which is good. You know, that means, you know, that kind of eliminates a lot of possibilities. This is a all-in-one laptop or desktop that has a built-in speaker, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So there are a number of things that have gone wrong. What's really gone wrong is that speaker's not emitting audio. With any luck, that's a software issue, not a hardware issue. But it could, of course, be a hardware issue. There's a speaker cable inside that enclosure that goes to the speaker. Maybe that fell off. No more sound. I hope it's not that, because then you got to open it up and you got to check. It could be in the same way. It could be a hardware issue with a sound. You know, used to say a soundboard. They're not soundboards anymore. They're just chips on the motherboard that drive the sound. They usually use Realtek chips. But most likely, it's a driver issue. It's just a software issue. So there are a number of ways that you can go about fixing this. First thing you want to do is just open up the system properties, the device manager. So on a Windows 10 machine, easiest way to do that is Windows key X. That'll pop up a menu over the start menu that's kind of the geek menu. And you'll see in there device manager. Select the device manager and make sure that go look at your audio devices. That's where the driver, the Realtek driver, lives. Make sure there's not a red X over it or a triangle with an exclamation mark or something like that. That actually would indicate, oh, yeah, the driver failed.
Right, and I've done that.
And what did you find?
It doesn't show any speakers. All it shows is headset.
Okay.
So I downloaded the driver from HP, and it downloaded it, and it said there's no place to install this driver.
It said there's no place to install this driver.
There's nowhere to install it.
Well, right here. Put it on the computer. How about that?
Well, maybe where it installs has gone bad.
Well, it's not like there's a special spot. Wow, that's interesting. So in your device manager, you see nothing that looks like a sound card or audio interface or anything like that.
No, it shows no speakers, and it's constantly telling me to sign up for Siri and get that going.
No. Look for audio drivers. If you find one, just delete it. Delete the driver. When you went to HP, you went to the specific site for that hardware, right? Because they have
my model number.
Exactly that model number. And you tried to install the audio, and then it said, no, there's nowhere for me to put this.
Right. It downloaded it, so there's nowhere to install it.
That is the strangest error message ever. It's not like it's a cupboard where there's a special slot for the audio driver. You install it on the hard drive like anybody else. So now I'm thinking that, now did it ever work, the audio?
Well, yes, but not since I got 10.
Well, Windows 10 broke it.
Yes.
Oh.
I went through a lot of the grandkids with this computer. It was amazing to look on their face when I said, yeah, you can touch the screen.
It sounds to me, when it's saying no place to put it, what it's really saying is you don't have any audio hardware.
It's dead.
Yeah, which you do, obviously, because you heard it.
It works. The Bluetooth works.
Yeah, the Bluetooth works. That's a separate thing, of course. So it's thinking you don't have any audio hardware. That means it's not a loose cable. It could be a faulty audio chip. You also could be disabled in the BIOS. Get that. So that's the only thing I could think of. You might want to reboot the machine, and you know when it says press delete to get into setup or escape or F10 or whatever it says. It's different on every computer. But watch carefully when it's starting up and press that button. Try escape, try delete, F11 and F10. Just, you know, reboot until you get these. You know, you remember this, the system setup screen? Yeah. And look in there, make sure that somehow the audio hasn't been disabled.
Okay.
It sounds like maybe your 11-year-old watched some dumb video from Leo and went into his the BIOS setup and deleted it.
He hasn't been working on it.
No, I'm just teasing.
He wants the computer now. I got.
Oh, he wants to fix Grandpa's computer so he can have it.
But it works fine.
No, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. So this is an all-in-one. There's no sound card. It's on the motherboard. HP is somewhat notorious for compatibility issues with Windows 10 and Windows 10 updates. They've been very slow, for instance, to get the Creators update because many HP machines have compatibility issues. When you upgraded to Windows 10, did it offer you the update? Did Microsoft say, "Hey, Windows 10 is ready. Would you like it for free?"
Oh yes.
Okay.
I had to do it. That was
going to
be the best fight I could.
Well, it's a worthwhile. By the way, it's a good thing to do. I'm nothing against doing that. And theoretically, Microsoft checks compatibility before making that offer. That's why I ask. If it makes the offer, Microsoft feels like, well, we're pretty sure this is all going to work. So you can do the. I mean, I've not had great experience, but Burris in the chat room saying, why don't you run the. The audio troubleshooter.
I did that.
And,
built-in repair.
Yeah. Well, if you press the Windows key and start typing troubleshoot, there'll be a audio troubleshooter. You could try that. I've not had much good to say about any of those troubleshooters, but it's worth a try.
Right.
I would look in BIOS and see if somehow that's been disabled. HP does it. They're saying HP also has a hardware diagnostics program you can get from HP. You might want to get that and run it.
Okay.
See what it says. HP. Something has happened. Because, again, I want to verify. You said the audio did work before you went to Windows 10.
Yes, it's called Beats Audio.
Yeah. They, for a while, before Apple bought them, HP owned the licensing rights to do that. Yeah. That's interesting. I'm sure Windows 10 has a driver for it. And you went to HP and got their Windows 10 driver. So
right. And I deleted my speakers. They got a little asterisk by a little.
You went through all that. I hate to say this, but at this point, it sounds like the audio chip failed.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it might be. But go into BIOS, make sure it's not been disabled. That's the only other thing I can think of.
Okay.
And
well, I listen to you all the time, Leo. And
nice.
You're lately been talking about all these old folks that have been listening to you for a long time. I just want to let you know there's young people that are paying attention to you, too.
11-year-olds. Nice.
He's 11.
That makes me feel really good. I'm not kidding. That's wonderful. Please get, what's his name?
His name is Chris.
Hi, Chris.
He might hear you, too.
Hey, Chris. We'll put this on YouTube and he can watch it.
There you go.
I'm sure Chris only watches YouTube. It's amazing, isn't it, how the younger generation, they're just in a different world from us.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is.
Yeah. I don't know if it's good or bad. I guess it's just the way it is. But I don't think the difference between my grandpa and me is as great as the difference between us and our grandchildren. I really think that this generation is in a whole different world.
Yes, they are.
Big, big differences. Hey, nice to talk to you. Give my regards to Chris. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. That's not Elvis, is it? Yeah? I love him. It just doesn't sound like. I guess later in life, I got down and got a little lower in the register there. Little Jailhouse Rock there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. The phone number. Kevin in Orange County is next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
How are you? Welcome to the show. Thanks
very
for being
good.
Very patient and hanging on for such a long time.
Thanks for taking the call. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I just heard that you went to Lyon to the Albocuse.
Oh, les Albocuse. Oh, my gosh. That
did,
is the
did
place.
Did you try the pâtisserie Sèvres? The one that just at the entrance?
Yes. Is that, do you know them?
No, well, I've just been there. I just love their pastries.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Yes.
That aisle was just amazing.
It was sure. It was so much fun. We spent an hour there shopping for our train trip to Paris on the Lyon-Paris train, and I had so much fun. And then we loaded up on saucisson and fromage and vin, and it was really wonderful. Are you from France?
Yes, I'm actually from Tahiti, but I do go to Paris very often.
Oh,
just came
nice.
Back with my wife and my daughter, like for a 45-day trip.
Wonderful.
July.
Tahiti used to be a Paris colony, right? So French is a language there?
Yes, correct. Yeah. Correct.
Paul Gauguin ended up in Tahiti, I remember.
Correct, yes.
Smart man.
Yeah.
What can I do for you today?
I was looking into upgrading my TV. I have an HD TV right now.
Mm-hmm.
But last week, I think I heard you talking with Scott and saying that basically all the contents right now, there was only 14% of the contents that were 4K and only half of that was HDR.
That's right.
But the reason I was wanting to upgrade was like for the HDRs.
Absolutely. The reason to upgrade. 4K is one thing, higher resolution, but HDR makes a visible difference even, separate from that. And it may be more important actually than the higher resolution. So you're right. And you're right. You're not going to see a lot of content, but there's maybe a few hundred DVDs, but all the new stuff will be coming out UHD, that's the 4K, HDR. Okay. So that's the good news, is that you're on the right side of the content. It's the same thing when HD came out. There wasn't a lot of HD content, but eventually it caught up. The big difference, and I think you probably heard us talk about it, is while broadcast television was able to go to HD, we're quite a way off from them going to 4K. So for the foreseeable future, the next few years, 4K will be either streaming, 4K HDR, and there is, if you go to Netflix or Vudu, Amazon, they all make a lot of relatively large number of HDR things. But really what you're going to want to do if you want to make that TV sing is get a UHD HDR Blu-ray player.
Got it.
And get the discs. And there'll be a handful of them, but more all the time.
Got it. So if I plan to buy like a budget, HDR TV, what would you recommend? Because I was reading about the TCL P series.
I will have to ask Scott if he's looked at the TCLs. I think the TCLs are very good. They also have Roku built in, which there's a lot to be said for that as well. It's the Roku operating system.
Mm-hmm.
My HDR OLED is an LG, and I think LG makes a range of prices, and even their lowest price, I think it's the B series, has the same panel as in their highest price series. So it's a very but it's not as inexpensive, I'm sure, as TCL. TCL is less expensive because they're a Chinese company, and like all the Chinese companies, they're trying to break into the U.S. market because they don't have brand awareness yet. So they may offer an equivalently good TV at a much lower price just to get sales, just to get in the market. Same thing happened with Korean manufacturers. South Korean manufacturers like Samsung and LG took over from the Japanese manufacturers, Sony and Toshiba and Panasonic. And, of course, they became the dominant sets of the last 5 years. And I think that the Chinese manufacturers are looking at that saying, we can do that, and we want to take the place of the Korean manufacturers. So watch out, Samsung. Watch out, LG. Here come TCL and Huawei, and there's a whole bunch of Chinese companies making, I think, very good stuff. I think the TCLs are – I seem to remember Scott, and I would look for reviews just to back this up, but I seem to remember Scott saying he thought very well of the TCLP series.
Okay.
Yeah. If it looks good to you, it's good.
Well, I have no idea.
It's LCD, right, though? It's not OLED.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm asking. If you can afford it, go with OLED. It is, HDR, it's a better choice because OLED is capable of blacker blacks and whiter whites.
The minimum budget is like, what, $2,000, $3,000?
Yeah, you can get a nice OLED from LG for $2,000,
yeah. Right. So, and even for the budget TVs, like, do I still need to, like, hire someone for calibration, or can I just, like...
Scott, who is a calibrator, and who calibrates my TVs will say so. But I do remember him coming in and with my first Samsung OLED and saying, oh, there's nothing to calibrate. This thing's perfect. I think they found a few things to do with the LG, but not a significant amount. There was a lot more calibration with the LCD TVs than there has been with the OLEDs. I think OLEDs come out of the factory because they're a premium product. I think they come out of the factory pretty well done. That's a lot of money. It's hundreds of dollars to get a professional calibrator in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about that. Put it in movie mode. Obviously, you want to take it out of the showroom mode, the dynamic mode, because that's going to be over bright so that they sell more TVs. Put it in cinema mode or movie mode, and I think you're pretty darn close with a good panel. And, you know, I think you're going to be blown away. I'll give you a little tip. I didn't go out and buy a standalone UHD Blu-ray player. There's certainly many manufacturers. Mm-hmm. I got an Xbox One S, which has...
Yes, I got one.
Yeah, well, you're set. You already got a UHD player. It does a very good job. And, of course, the new Xbox comes out next month, the Scorpio.
Scorpion,
And that will be also UHD Blu-ray. And I think it supports both HDR10 UHD and the Dolby UHD.
Dolby Vision,
yeah. Nice. You want that if you can.
Okay, got it. I do have to buy a new HDMI cable as well, right? That goes with it.
Yeah, I would. I mean, don't get a $100 gold-plated one. Get the $999 model, but do make sure it's the latest HDMI, yeah.
Got it.
They have higher
bandwidth. Can I ask you one last question?
Sure.
I was just wondering, for the size of the TV, does it, because right now I'm about 8 feet away, 7.5, 8 feet away from the TV.
That's pretty close. You're good. You don't have to go more than 55 at 8 feet, I don't think.
Okay, 55 is good. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, get as big as you can afford, but 8 feet's pretty close. Most people are farther away. Yeah. And I would bet that if you look at there are online, I'll find one and put it in the show notes, calculators. You know, the Dolby people have a calculator. But generally speaking, they want you to get a really giant screen, so big that you can barely see the edges, which means you'd want a 70-inch if you're 8 feet away. But I think 55 or 60 would be just fine with 8 feet
away. I just wanted to be still safe,
You're pretty close. You're pretty close. I think that 8 feet is close enough that you don't have to get a giant set.
Okay, perfect. So 55 feet is
yeah.
Okay.
As you get farther away, of course, you want a bigger set because it gets smaller and smaller. But 8 feet is about as close as you can get, frankly. I mean, otherwise your mother will say, get away from that TV. You'll ruin your eyes. We have a 70 in the living room, but I have, I think, a 65. I'm about 8 feet away as well. It's nice because it fills your view. It's better than going to a movie theater. I was talking about this yesterday. I hated Blade Runner 2049 in the movie theater. It was too dark. I know it's going to look better on my nice home theater system.
Yes, nice.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call. Au revoir, my friend.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Appreciate it.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Final segment right after this. Fire up the funk. Yeah, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Thanks to Michael Kosier, our musical director. He's the guy who chooses the tunes and always has a lot of fun doing it. Thanks also to Kim Schaffer, who answers your phone calls and helps get you on the air. I appreciate it. Couldn't do the show without them, but most importantly, of course, couldn't do it without you. Thank you for listening today. Next on the line, Eric in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Hi, Eric.
Hello. How are you doing, Leo?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm just great.
What can I do?
Except for this one issue.
Of course, nobody calls because everything's going great. There's always something. What is it?
So I converted to High Sierra. And
the latest version of Mac OS.
Yes, 10.13. I have a Time Machine external drive and thought it would be great to convert it to APFS since it's as great as...
I think they say not to do that, don't they?
Yeah, I didn't read that part.
Uh-oh.
So I was curious if anyone knew of a way to get it back to HFS.
Is it not working at all now?
No.
Can you see the contents, or is the drive just?
Oh no, you could. All the data's still there. I mean, yeah. So it's
so so.
I, That's the good news.
And the thing is, you caught this before you had data loss, so I guess what you could do is just reformat the drive HFS Plus and let Time Machine continue and just hope you don't need any of the older files.
Right, but if I, you know, this picture is, you know, it's been around for a while, this particular disk. So.
I'm not a real fan of Time Machine because of the way it works. It's really... We have a technical term in the industry. It's a kludge. which
I'll write that term down.
And let me ask the hams. That's how you say it. Kludge, yeah. It is. I read a book. I listened to an audiobook, a technology audiobook, and all the way through the narrator said kludge. And I thought, well, it is spelled that way, but I think it's kludge. It sounds worse if you say kludge. So a kludge is an inelegant solution to a technical problem. It's the equivalent of chewing gum and scotch tape. And yeah. So the way Time Machine works, it uses hard links it's just a mess. And I'm not surprised. And I'm not surprised, frankly, that APFS doesn't like it because APFS is modern.
Yeah.
And frankly, you don't need Time Machine with APFS. Now, I don't know if Apple... APFS supports APFS. The new file system is something called a CAU file system, CAU stands for something on write. I can't remember what the C in CAU stands for, but the
copy
idea
on write, maybe,
huh? Copy on write. I think the idea of CAU file systems is they really protect your data with a number of very nice features. ZFS, which Apple almost adopted, is also a CAU file system. On the Linux side, there's others like BTRFS. But APFS is very well designed. One of the things CAU file systems do is they allow you to make snapshots, which is basically what Time Machine is, but done right.
Oh, okay.
So at some point, I'm hoping that Apple will enable this feature as the new Time Machine.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. There's an article in Mac Observer, Time Machine and APFS, What You Need to Know. Among other things, it says they will play nice, sorta, which tells me not to use it, because it can't use APFS directly.
Right.
So generally what Apple's telling people is do APFS if your main drive is an SSD. APFS makes a big difference in SSDs. Do not do it if you're using a Fusion drive. It doesn't quite work yet. They promise it will eventually. And do not use it on your Time Machine drives. I guess what I would say is if you want, copy the data off of your APFS drive onto a standard formatted HFS Plus drive and plug it in and see if it works.
Okay.
It might.
Okay.
It probably will still work. And then you'll be better off. And then I just don't rely on Time Machine. Time Machine's convenient for versioning, you know, going back to the previous version of the document.
Right.
It does that weird, you know, spacey woo-woo. But it's not the best way to do backups. I would recommend for future something called Super Duper.
Okay.
Which you can get for free, and then there's a slightly upgraded version for a fee, and I pay for it because I want them to continue to make Super Duper forever. It will do all the things Time Machine will do. It even works with Time Machine, but I just feel like it's the better way to back up. It works fine with APFS. It will make what I do with Super Duper is I take an external drive, can use your Time Machine drive, and I make an image of my internal drive. And it's bootable. That means that if the internal drive fails, I just reboot the Mac, hold down the Option key, boot to the external drive, and I'm good to go. Then you have Super Duper run in the background, say every hour or every day. It will update that bootable external drive so that it's an exact clone all the time. That is really handy. You can then have another drive if you want that's a Time Machine style versioning drive. There's all sorts of things you can do with Super Duper. It's just a fabulous backup program. And as long as we're moving to APFS, let's hope Apple turns on the snap. It's called Snapshot, the snapshotting feature that will make all of this kind of unnecessary. It'll do what Super Duper does and Time Machine does kind of automatically in the background. And you'll be able to go back in time. It does versioning. It's really sweet. And I don't, as far as I can tell, I haven't really dug into APFS. I don't think they've turned on those features yet, but it's there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. So maybe it's time just to say goodbye to to Time Machine.
All right.
Put it in the time vault. All right.
Thank you very much.
Nice to talk to you. Take care. Bye.
All right,
bye, Eric. Last call of the day, Sean in Mechanicsville, Virginia. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I got a problem with internet. About 8 years ago, we moved into a house outside of Richmond, and there's no internet to the house.
Oi. What were you thinking? What were you thinking? What were you thinking?
We did not realize at the time.
No one would buy a house where there was no plumbing.
Yeah, that's true.
Nowadays, I tell you, the internet.
10 years ago.
Yeah, no, you're right. 10 years ago, you could have.
It wasn't a big thing, really.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you don't have the internet, you're kind of not. You're in the wrong century.
We recently got a bunch of little dots and kind of bottlenecked everything because. Yeah. So
you're using a Verizon device to connect to their LTE network as your internet?
Yes, it's called a My Home.
My Home, okay, yeah.
Yeah, LTE.
It's pretty fast, right?
Yeah, but like Amazon Prime Video, we try to stream.
Yeah, I feel like
download it.
Right, Verizon probably does some traffic shaping because remember they. You're on a cell tower. It's a limited bandwidth cell tower. They have other customers using it. They don't want you to use up all the bandwidth. My guess is they don't tell you this, but they do things called bandwidth shaping. As soon as they see you streaming a video, for instance, they slow it down because they don't want you to use up all the bandwidth. It's not ideal. But you don't have choices if you're not wired. If you don't have cable, you might check with the phone company, see if there's a DSL solution. There's also satellite like WildBlue, Exceed. I really like it. It's fast, but there's problems. It's expensive. Bandwidth caps. This is the problem living in rural areas. It's very tricky. You may have the best solution. It's just not perfect. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. At least if you don't have any plumbing, you can use an outhouse. No internet. I don't know what you do. So have you looked at those other solutions like DSL and
The problem is I'm a mile off of the main road in the driveway, and there's four of us.
You're really remote, yeah. Well, one thing you could do, if there's a bunch of houses, you could talk to your neighbors, and you could say, if I were to pull a fiber or a high-quality connection down our road, would you help me pay for it and then help me pay the monthly fee? This is not unusual. Yeah. People put to co-ops.
I'm not against that. I'm trying to figure out who I could contact to do that.
Yeah, so that's what you need to do is figure out who offers. It'll be more expensive, obviously, but non-residential service, you know, high-speed service that you can get trenched out there or maybe do a microwave. A lot of people do this in rural areas. They'll put up a tower that can – because microwave is line of sight that will get microwave, and they can get a lot of bandwidth in through the microwave and then share it with the neighbors. So that is
Would that be a company as well?
That's a company, yeah. So I'm not sure in your area who to check with. Okay. You're gonna have to do some research around, but it will be an internet service provider in your area, and it'll probably be somebody who specializes in business service. And you just have to talk to them. And you know what? Make a phone call. If you get a nice tech, he'll probably say, "Well, we don't do that," but you know who might, and you know you'll get a lead.
Yeah, the last time I tried calling, I think it was Verizon.
No, don't call them.
That's a recipe. That was it.
Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster. That's why you want to call a small local guy who will maybe be a little more talkative and a little more helpful. Big company like Verizon, they don't care.
Okay, good. Very good.
Good luck.
Love the shows.
Thank you.
I try to stream as much as I can, but, you know, I'm limited.
I'm sympathetic.
Yeah.
Now you know why I want everybody to get high-speed internet. That's my business.
Yeah, when you were talking about Sonic out there, the speeds they can reach are unbelievable here.
See, they will do that, for instance. That's an example. If you had Sonic out there, they would sell you kind of wholesale bandwidth that you could then resell.
Do you know if they're moving across country yet?
They're slowly doing it. They had hopes of getting into Chicago and other areas of the country sooner than they are. They're putting a lot of capital into just getting fiber out here. But I think eventually they hope to go bigger, you bet.
Yeah. Well, maybe I can
to track them down.
Say, I'll be your first customer in Virginia.
You put a tower on my land. That's fine.
Hey, it's not. I hope you solve this. This is a problem across the board. You're the third call today. It's just,
yeah.
It's
well,
just
I was
an
listening
issue.
To your show from yesterday.
Yeah.
And had about the tower inside, and I was like, I'd love that, but my internet's so slow.
You
I don't know if
you
can
do it. Yeah, this is a big issue, especially as the internet becomes more important.
Yeah. Okay. I really, really appreciate it.
Take care. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time.